Welcome back to our anime show. I'm Binge Monster.
And I am a Green Queen.
And there are so many great anime that are one or two episodes in as the spring 2024 anime season has kicked off. Today, we are going to be talking about one of the ones that I think everybody is super excited about. Crunchyroll is definitely pushing, as a Green Queen mentioned last week, which is Kaiju number 8. But before we jump into that, I really wanted to take just a moment and talk about two articles that came out in the past week that really caught my attention and I was pretty excited to talk about on the podcast, one of which focuses around My Hero Academia and its influence and how it's paved the road for some of the shows that are really popular right now. And then another dancing viral phenomenon that just kind of came out of nowhere, which we'll talk about when we get there. But I want to go ahead and start with this article that came out sometime last week, I believe, on My Hero Academia and how it paved the way for some of the more viral shows. Now, one thing that I think is really interesting in terms of the timing, and I'd love to kind of just get your thoughts on this, is that recently, I think, Jujutsu Kaisen just broke a record for, like, being the most popular anime globally for more than 3 years, which was something that previously Attack on Titan had actually held. Yeah. There was some, I don't know if it was Guinness that came out with this, but there was some article a couple of weeks back that was talking about just how popular Jujutsu Kaisen has become. As a precursor to that, what the Comic Book Review just came out with an article themselves saying that My Hero actually played a huge role in paving the way for shows like Jujutsu Kaisen to attain international success and kind of pave the way for it to exist on the platform that it is today. And I just thought that that could spark a really interesting conversation because people really have really underappreciated My Hero, particularly over the past, I don't know, 1 or 2 years, it kind of feels like. Well, what's your thoughts on this?
I definitely have some strong thoughts. So, like, I feel like My Hero Academia was, I think, the first anime I watched after deciding I would watch this thing that my best friend likes called anime, after we watched Avatar The Last Airbender. Both you and our buddy Daz, who's been on the podcast, were both like, okay, My Hero Academia is, like, probably the next one that makes the most sense. And I totally loved it. It was so good. I feel like with short form video and things of that sort, and how these interviews at different conventions started to get really, really popular from anime content creators, right? I feel like that also kind of like made a big leap over the past couple years. And that was not something that I wasn't in the world at the time, but it felt like the more I was seeing those, it started for me with people being like, which fan base do you think is the stinkiest? And everybody was like, My Hero Academia, My Hero Academia, My Hero Academia. And I was confused because I was like, that feels just like random. And then it was like, what's the most annoying fan base? Oh, My Hero Academia, My Hero Academia. So it's like, there's a part of me that feels like the fans of My Hero Academia are obviously, like with most things, over a wide spectrum of people.
Yeah.
Especially since My Hero is so popular and so many people before I even really got into anime were like, you should try My Hero Academia. It's so good.
Yeah.
And my thoughts on this are, I feel like there, what I've noticed is there's people that hate on My Hero Academia, maybe because of the fan base and like just to troll something that people like, which is, of course, we see that again in every community and every fan base of anything. Yeah. And then there's people that like My Hero Academia because it's phenomenal and it's so good. And then there's people that like My Hero Academia probably to a point in the spectrum that I am a little bit not comfortable with, right? Where it's like, okay, you really like My Hero Academia. And so I don't know. I feel like the fan base is so broad and I hate that it gets so much hate, But it's like, do people feel like it's childish? I think like that might be where some of this comes from. Like maybe My Hero has a bit of like younger fan base. This has been my stream of consciousness that I have a lot of confusion around the hate for My Hero Academia. I don't know. What are your thoughts on my stream of consciousness or the article itself?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think at some point it kind of became cool to... this very like groupthink, you know, exercise that just like social experiment that, you know, really gained traction to just target My Hero Academia and shit on it. In my opinion, very unnecessarily. I'm really not sure why that picked up steam. I also have not personally experienced, and maybe that's because I don't know. I don't sit around forums any these days, and I don't see where the toxicity exists. If it's on TikTok and people are having conversations about what characters are stronger than others, that exists in every shonen fandom. That I haven't seen that's unique to the My Hero fan base. I'm not exactly sure where that comes from. I think. Largely, you know, I've definitely noticed growing up that folks who tend to be, less social or have social anxiety or tend to be like, you know, the odd ones in the group stereotypically, right? Like just thinking back even on my high school experience, those groups tend to have people that maybe do watch anime. So, you know, I wonder if this is just kind of like an evolution of the people who like My Hero. And I don't know. I don't know where it's coming from, but I think it's unnecessary. I think it's unwarranted criticism of the show. And one of the things the article does really well, which really lights a fire in me in terms of this argument of it being unnecessary hate, is that like the demand for this title, and particularly the demand from different vendors and distributors here in the United States, were one of the reasons why this title ended up becoming a huge success in the eyes of Toei Animation. Their CEO had put out a statement saying, hey, you know, we were really struggling overseas before My Hero, and we saw a huge demand. There were distributors trying to negotiate for the license to do different things with the My Hero franchise on a relatively daily basis from what he's describing. From a business perspective, I think it helped them to understand that, oh, there's a huge potential opportunity overseas. People want this. And you know, if we were to look back at the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, My Hero merchandise is everywhere. There were shoes that we even talked about on this podcast. There's trinkets and Halloween costumes and outfits. And you know, I can imagine why this title was so successful in America, right? We have Marvel and DC, and we have all of these superhero-like characters. And it is and there are also, in the My Hero universe, there are American superheroes that are mentioned multiple times in the manga. And even All Might spent some time coming to America. So you can tell that there is some, you know, some American influence in the world of the show. And, you know, I don't know how popular superhero stories are in other countries, but at least in the U.S., consumers here eat that up, right? So it makes sense that this title was kind of destined to succeed. It also happens to be really good, and that obviously helps. But I see where they're going with this, particularly where the CEO of Toei is going with this, because
this is Toho Animation.
Yes, right. Toho, yeah, not yeah, Toei. Yeah, you're
this
correct.
Article was a conversation with the the CEO of Toho Animation. Okay.
Yeah, and he, you know, when we look back at like big merchandise numbers or the titles that, you know, you tend to find consumer products for, you typically go back to the big three in Dragon Ball Z. Like you see One Piece, you see Naruto, you see Bleach stuff, you see Dragon Ball Z stuff everywhere And then there's the trading card game anime, right? Where there's the trading card game stuff, like the Pokemon games and so forth. But there's a lot of My Hero stuff. A lot of it. And not just in, like, Hot Topic, where you might expect to see some, you know, niche shows come through. There's a huge catalog of items, if you were to just look it up right now, that you'd find for My Hero. So
you could probably go on, like, Target.com and find, like, t-shirts and blind bags and keychains and all stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I think what it did was it made the producers and Toho CEO speaks to this in this article realize that there is a larger market to generate revenue for some of these titles. And you know, a Jujutsu Kaisen, Frieren, these are some of the titles that they mentioned to go on to say, like, hey, My Hero and the market opportunity that it that we've realized exists now because it was so successful, makes it possible for us to make different types of investments into different titles. They also mentioned Spy Family, and you see that too as a very up and coming title in terms of merchandise and consumer goods.
So
I wonder if this is going to unlock more opportunities for other titles to thrive in very new ways that didn't really exist before, because there are new revenue streams that they can take advantage of internationally outside of you know, continental Japan, that allow them to maybe have larger budgets for the shows that they put on that they're animating.
Sorry, I just want to ask a question. So, like, what you're inferring is, like, is that more in, you know, or more so the question you're posing, like the thought, are we going to see changes in, like, what animes get put forth because they might apply or might draw a larger audience, more international audience? Or are we also, I think we're also actually at the same time saying that, in the same vein of, like, you know, the old heads that are like, Dragon Ball Z walked, so, you know, this could run. Like, I think we're having that same conversation. But My Hero, I think, plays a pivotal role in that development of anime to the, like, global scale as well. So I think actually both, just to kind of segment this conversation, I think both of those things are happening at the same time. So I wanted to just understand, to your point, like, specifically you're talking about what kind of content in it being more for a broader audience. Is that what you're saying?
I think you're nailing it. I think you're doing a better job than me, because I'm sort of kind of reacting to this really rawly, but I think you're really grounding kind of exactly what I'm trying to say, which is, you know, on one side, I think we will start to see a shift in the types of shows that get greenlit, that get kind of maybe forward investment at a level that maybe in years past they might not have, because there is this estimation of potential market value from that title that really might be found outside of Japan. I think Solo Leveling is a good example of that. I think in our last episode, we talked about the fact that it wasn't super popular in Japan, but it's widely popular here. I think Naruto's another example. I know One Piece is, like, mega huge there, but I have to imagine that Naruto globally is a much bigger phenomenon than even it is in Japan. Not that it's not a big deal in Japan, because it is. But I think we're really starting to see that. So point one, I think we're going to start to see some foreign investment in titles that might not have gotten it, or may get more resources than they typically might, even going into a season one, right? Where there's not a proven market in terms of viewership, for example. And then second, to your point, you know, I like that line of thinking of, like, hey, this show walk so these other shows could run. I think that people wanted large series that would stick around for a while, that weren't going to end in one or two seasons because it was clearly meant to just be kind of, you know, something quick that eventually goes away, like we see so many different series do. They wanted something kind of serialized, because we've lost that, right? For many, many years, whether it was Bleach or Naruto or to this day, One Piece, we were used to seeing certain really incredible shonen shows just come out on a weekly basis. And And then we moved to this model, or, well, we didn't move to this model, but just other shows that weren't as large would come out, you know, maybe once every 2 years. And I think consumers wanted more. And with My Hero, there's so much source material. It's such a big story. We're on season 7 now, in this current season that we're at right now.
Yeah.
And people still love it. So I think people were kind of craving that. And I think it put Shonen back on the map. You know, I'll give credit to Attack on Titan for that too. I think with the return of Attack on Titan, with the draw of My Hero, it's paved the way for other shonen to continue to be produced and to continue to get that love from everyday consumers who watch shonen. So yeah, I mean, I don't know how successful a show like Jujutsu Kaisen might have been without all of the, or even Chainsaw Man for that matter, without all the marketing dollars that kind of went into those. They definitely like really made those investments to make sure that the American audience knew it was coming, so that even people who don't normally watch anime like would give it a try, right?
I have a crazy take that's coming to me, like, sure. just a thought process. So like when I'm thinking about My Hero, right, like My Hero begins and it feels the pacing feels different from something like our Naruto, but it feels like Naruto. Like we are watching someone who is so ancient go and become, you know, whatever, the strongest person alive or what have you. But My Hero gets, I would say, again, due to the pacing, it gets a little bit more serious and a little bit more like raw, a little bit faster for the viewers. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think there's something to be said about like pushing the envelope and seeing what is successful globally. Because if I think of something like My Hero Academia, if I'm thinking on a scale of like maybe like PG-13 to R spectrum, like My Hero feels super PG-13 at its start. But then like Jujutsu Kaisen at its start feels a little bit more towards rated R. And then when you get to like Chainsaw Man, that feels like it's right up there with like something that's rated R. So I just think because you mentioned those three titles, I was like, that just kind of seems interesting to me. Like, are we kind of progressing and like pushing the envelope a little more? Like what are the audiences wanting in this, you know? But also mentioned in this article is things like Frieren Beyond Journey's End and then Apothecary Diaries, which and Spy Family, which don't feel in that vein at all. But, you know, that was at least a connection I made with those three. But I think also something that's really coming to me is like, you know, people are seeing from My Hero and from JJK that like these stories can be like very deep and very interesting. And I think that because they're reaching a broader audience, more audiences are being like, maybe I should watch more anime. And then they watch something like Frieren and they're absolutely blown away because it's one of the greatest animes of all time. I can already tell with season one. But anyway, speaking as Frieren's number one stan, I lost my train of thought, but like you hear what I'm saying.
No, it absolutely feels like, do. I think it's noteworthy that you compared it to Naruto that you made it a point to reference Naruto in the point. And I think one of the reasons why I see a lot of similarities between Naruto and My Hero, to your point, is that both stories tend to start off, you said it was more like a PG-13, and then as the story goes on, it gets darker and it gets more mature and it works closer to R. And I think it's a part of that is because these stories clearly age with their audiences, right? And so there's something for everyone and those kinds of stories where younger people can watch it. And then at some point, hopefully by the time it gets darker, they've aged enough to be able to continue to watch it, because I don't know that I really would recommend, you know, a My Hero Academia to somebody under the age of 10, for example, whereas with season 1 and 2 or 3, like, yeah, maybe. Right. Especially with like where it's going right now, I don't want them to see this yet. Yeah, and even in regular Naruto, right? Like there's like deaths, but it's not and like
devastation.
Yeah, it's different. It's a little bit different. So I think you bring up an interesting point there for sure. Maybe changing gears here a little bit, this, there is another show that is taking the world by storm in a very unexpected way, at least from my perspective. When I first saw the first core of it, gosh, this must have been 2023, I guess, right?
It was literally last year. That's it.
Yeah. It was not supposed to be what it is right now. It was not supposed to find its way into pop culture in the way that it is. And we're talking about none other than Mashal, which is just such a fun, hysterical anime. And we've talked about it a couple different times on our podcast. But in the last week or so, this dance trend with the ending song, what is the song called?
It's called Bling Bang Bang Born by Japanese hip-hop duo Creepy Nuts.
And
which says enough, I feel like.
It definitely speaks for itself. And what's happening is people are doing the dance that the characters in the outro song are animated to do.
Wait. But before we continue, Binge Monster, you gotta give the people what they want. You gotta give them a little bar. You gotta give them a bar.
I cannot bring myself to do it.
Bring bum bum, bring bum bum. Come on, we gotta.
You nailed it so well. I'm just gonna say anybody who wants to see it should just replay what she just did one more time. But it's got this like Harlem Shake. The early days of Harlem Shake virality too. Like I feel like this is gonna keep going. Who knows tomorrow? This could be the end of it. But there were like entire classrooms of students who are like choreographing to this and doing it, and most of them are in Japan. But I feel like it's only a matter of time before somebody tries in the U.S. Like it's so. Have you seen these videos?
They're so good, and I think to your point, it speaks to the Harlem Shake, because I'm trying to remember the Harlem Shake, but it's like everyone being normal, right? And then like it starts and then everyone's like doing something crazy or weird or dancing. So like this and it's so funny because it's not like there's dance choreography. It's not like the character is doing dance choreography. It's purely just like edited and cut together to look like kind of psychedelic-y, but it's just the one character doing the dance that is so simple, which I think is key. It's so simple. Anyone can do it. Two fists, bomp, 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 back and forth. Anyone can do it. But it starts with like one of Mash doing it. And then it's the same Mash just repeated. So it's not like But people are translating that into being like, yes, one person does it, and now all the people do it, and now like more people do it. It's like it's such an easy way. And if you're because of the technology we have, right, you just easily cut the same shot. You cut, and then there's 15 people there, or 15 people like up and out of their seat, and it totally has that Harlem Shake effect. That was a fantastic comparison at my part.
You know, it's funny, my theater roots are going to show here for a second, but at the very end, everyone does this point and stare. It's like, it's very Matilda. It's very like, do you know what I'm talking about?
We are revolting children. Let me give revolting times.
How does that song end? I don't remember.
Till all the work is done and we'll something. We are revolting.
Yes, we are revolting. God. And they're all like pointing and looking up, and it's like that pose, and they all nail that in this dance too. If you haven't seen and you're still with us, just go on TikTok, go on YouTube. I'm sure there are so many different videos of people doing it right now. But I'm excited because I genuinely cannot remember a time when the choreography of an ending song made it viral in real life. There were clips that people would use, or maybe just the sound.
Yeah.
But can you?
The only one coming to my head is the JoJo's. And they like lean back. But it's not like choreography.
Right. No, but the JoJo's fandom does a good job of bringing things in. But this is like dance choreography. that, like, I don't know, like, mass groups of people are doing this together at the same time. Like, I can't think of anything like that. And it's kind of hysterical, super shocking, just as shocking as the rise of Mashal was. And it's warranted, but nonetheless a shock, right?
It, like, really, because, like, when people tell you that it's Harry Potter mixed with, what did they say, One Punch Man, and you're like, okay, and then it just is something, like, that is, like, you're like, yeah, but it's so much better than anything I could have imagined, because it's so fucking simple. Like, it's so simple.
I love it.
It's so good.
It's such a fun series.
But you know what? People love this song so much. Something that I have seen a lot. Like, I've seen people do the dance or like do a transition or something. Like, I've seen content creators kind of like incorporate the dance, but I've seen this duo, Creepy Nuts, like in Japan. I think it's a Japanese company, obviously, that like they'll produce. You've probably seen them. They'll produce. It's like a white background and it's the singer doing it like not a cappella, but like live.
Uh-huh.
With live vocals. I've seen this person do this. Bring, bum, bum, bring, bum. Like, I've seen it reposted. I've seen it on, like, my TikTok feed, my Instagram. I've seen it so many times. And it hits. I'm like, getting to see this guy do this is something very, very cool. So I kind of hope it just keeps going. I don't know if I'll get sick of it. It just hits. It's a good song.
I don't know if this is, like, a common thing, but I've seen this, like, person with blonde hair in a lot of the videos, and I don't know if that's a part of the trend of, like, having the person who kicks it off wearing the blonde. I don't know. I've seen it a couple different times, and maybe that's the singer. I don't know. I really don't know, but I've seen that as a part of the trend, and I'm curious if any of our listeners know what that's about to kind of let us know. But speaking of, you know, things that are happening that were unexpected or have never happened before, Kaiju number 8 has finally come out with its first episode this past weekend, and there were a couple of firsts that have never happened before, with the release of the first episode of Kaiju number 8, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And they are that it's the first anime ever to basically have, like, I and this is confusing to me because some anime will be like, yes, it's simulcast, but it just feels like it's not, because then I go to look for the English dub and it's just not there. But this is one of the first anime ever that is simultaneously airing around the world at the same time in 200 countries, correct?
Yes.
So does that mean before. Like, to the day it comes out, you're able to go and get it, I think, in your native language, correct? Will that happen all of the time, or was that just the opening?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if Crunchyroll's gonna support 200 languages.
Not that, but...
No, I think what typically happens, and this is something that we should look into, because I hear what you're saying, like, they say that it's simulcasted, but maybe the first episodes typically aren't, or maybe what they do is they say, okay, like, you know, this title will come out on this date at this time globally, right? And so, you know, it might come out at 8 p.m. on a Friday, but 8 p.m. on a Friday is different everywhere around the world. So I think that's how they usually do it. And they do it that way to make sure, I'm sure from a technology perspective at least, that the world's traffic that are going to watch a title doesn't crash the platform servers. That's powering it, which means, you know, at least from my perspective, that Crunchyroll felt really confident in its ability to handle all of the volume of people that, you know, might come and rush to watch the episode when it came out. But I think it's also significant from the perspective of, like, what it really means, right? Which is, you know, if the way that I was explaining it just now is the way that they typically do it, and instead of doing it that way, there's just a single time all around the world where it comes out and everybody gets it at the same second. Now, that's really cool, and I think it's kind of symbolic in a way where it's like, hey, this is, you know, we're creating this everyone to appreciate at the same time, it's accessible at the same time. I think that's pretty cool. And it could, again, it could also be, you know, that these producers are trying new ways to create and connect global communities together around something where everybody can respond to it in the same moment. You know, we're not going to see leaks of things from people who watched it slightly earlier and so forth, right? I don't know if you ever remember this, but like when I was younger, I remember like watching American Idol every so often. And it used to frustrate me because the East Coast or the West Coast would always get to see the results first because of the time zone. So like one would air it live and then the other would be like, oh, this is a pre-recording of the episode. And so like people would just get to see things first. And even like on New Year's, like the Dick Clark show, people would see it live and then they would just replay it on the air for the West Coast when it was actually close to time. So I imagine that's how they, you know, have been doing things over the years. And I don't know, I think this is pretty special.
I totally think this is special. You know, I think, yeah, like I would be interested to actually see the time again, because to your point, like sometimes, and this is so funny, it happens with like things that like I might want to watch that are in Korean Standard Time. One time I attended a live fan event for TXT, but it was at my 4 a.m. So it's like, I wonder what time this is available. Like, is it available at 12 p.m. in Japan, in Tokyo, Japan, or like, you know what I mean? But it is available I'm excited about it, and it still is a little confusing to me because I get it. You can air it simultaneously, but I'm like, are you still catering it to Japan? You should. Right. I would respect that decision, but it's still just a great feat. I mean, in 200 countries, like, I guess that's not really a thing. Like, there must be different licensing things and that they had to hoops they had to go through in order to secure that in a lot of different countries or what have you. I don't know. I bet that was a part of it. Is it? What do you think?
I'm sure it was. I'm sure that did play a role in it. You know, like I said, I imagine that the international community being able to share an experience was a motivation for this. But it is also not fully completely clear to me like how this differs from the way that they typically do things. I don't know what time it came out in the U.S. either, so that's kind of a big question mark for me. I certainly didn't watch it the day that it came out. I'm in the process of moving, so I didn't have a chance to do that. it was really good. One of the things that they announced is that there's going to be at least 12 episodes in the first core, and we know that because there is a Blu-ray DVD that's been announced, and that in the description it mentions that there'll be, you know, 12 episodes. Whether or not then they immediately flip over to do the second core right back to back like they do sometimes, or whether they split it out just to see, you know, how successful this run is going to be, and then make a decision on whether to continue the rest of season one later is kind of TBD. But at the minimum, we know we're getting at least 12 episodes. So that's interesting. I'd never seen that as the quoted source for how we know how many episodes there's going to be. And quite frankly, I've never known how we just knew. I've not really questioned it, which I'm a little embarrassed to say. But if it's based off of this content, because in Japan, the Blu-ray business and how much DVD sales contribute to the success of an anime getting renewed is still a huge factor. Like that and CDs that from like selling the music and so forth, like that DVD sales still play like a huge role. Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that is interesting, because I would never. My understanding is it's almost an expense to make a CD. I'm like, who's using CDs anymore?
Apparently, it's still very, very popular there.
But Kaiju number 8, I mean, we've really, like, I would understand their confidence in like Crunchyroll especially, like, I mean, they've been promoting this since last year, or like, I forget exactly when it was announced that it was going to be an anime, it feels but
like forever, right?
It feels like forever. It feels like they announced Spy Family was going to be an anime. Spy Family came out, and then like a second after Spy Family came out, they said, oh, also we're going to do Kaiju number 8. Because again, there were like three at the time: Spy Family, Kaiju, and something else.
Chainsaw Man?
But Chainsaw Man, yes, and they were all kind of like serialized. The manga was coming out weekly on the Shonen app, and so, you know, Spy Family got announced, Chainsaw Man got announced, and Chainsaw Man came out with a relatively quick turnaround. But Kaiju and Braid was the one where we're like, when is this gonna come out? Like, please, like, make this happen, because I think it's. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they wanted to see how Chainsaw Man did to try to inform. I mean, there must be some numbers behind. Probably Chainsaw Man had more readers or something like that.
Very possibly.
Which is why they would have put it out first.
Yeah, and maybe they just assumed that the gory slasher element to it would lead it to be more globally embraced by the larger populace of consumers than mm-hmm. something like this that might require a couple episodes in to like really hook people, right? I don't know.
Yes, I hear you. And can I talk about the synopsis of the show? Okay, so of Kaiju number 8, I want to talk quickly about like what it's about. So Kaiju number 8 follows Kafka Hibino, who we find out is part of the Monster Sweeper Incorporation. In a world where kaiju, big giant monsters of all shapes, sizes, abilities, and so forth, will randomly wreak havoc, unclear as to where they come from, at least in the first episode, but they're very apparent. And so the Monster Sweeper Incorporation is a community, lol. No, it's a corporation where they hire people to come clean up after the kaiju have been destroyed. And so our main character works on the cleanup committee. So the heroes come in, they kill the kaiju, they do what they need to do, and then our main character comes in and cleans it up. And, you know, there's all different kinds. Oh, you're on the head, you're on the arms, you're on mopping the blood, you're on the intestines, and he hates the intestines, and you can imagine why. But all his life, when he was a youngin', so this guy's like 32 or something like that, in his 30s, and all his life, he wanted to be a part of the Japanese Defense Force, or the Japan Defense Force, which are the people that come and defeat the kaiju. And he has this friend, Mina, and they made a promise to each other when they were kids, we're both going to grow up, we're going to be part of the Japan Defense Force. You find out she is, and she's like of a high rank, third degree or something like that, and then she's successful doing what she needs to be doing what she promised to do, and our boy is, you know, just aging away, cleaning up literal monster feces. And in the first episode, we meet Ichikawa, and he's like a new recruit to the cleanup team, and, you know, you get to see kind of like what the story will be from there. But that's the lay of the circumstances of for Kaiju sure. number 8.
And for those of you who are trying to like picture this, it's almost like these monsters and the havoc they wreak are of One Punch Man scale, right? Where they're mm-hmm. like, it's like clear mass devastation. You know, the havoc that they're capable of wreaking is, you know, equivalent to the monsters in One Punch Man that destroy multiple buildings and, you know, billions and billions of dollars of damage. And I don't know if you feel this way, but, you know, you get the sense that even in the first episode that the people on the defense force have weapons or companions and power, not necessarily powers, but you get the sense that there's something really special about them. And I don't know if you read into this or not, or if I just felt this way, because I've read a good portion into Kaiju number 8, but it felt very similar to that very, very tiny first arc in Bleach, where they're introducing the Hollows, and, you know, you start to see, like, is it possible for the main character to, you know, embrace this world in a interesting way, and like, you know, what, how is this going to turn around for him? And, you know, what are, what, and, but the monsters and the hollows, like there's something very, like, obviously very scary about them. And, I don't know, like, I get a lot of One Punch Man Bleach vibes from Kaiju number 8. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I think, yeah. I mean, it just feels like, you know, something like One Punch Man and Bleach, like, they feel like they're for an older audience somehow, like, and that's, I think, what Kaiju number 8 is for me, is, like, I'm almost 30, and this character, and it's, like, it's handling, you know, even from the beginning, you start to see just kind of like how our main character Kafka is feeling about his life. Does he have regrets? Does he have this? Does he have that? And they feel like mature themes, but not in the way of like, ah, yes, they talk about war. Like,
yeah,
in a mature theme, right? Like, you would say the same thing about Attack on Titan, but it's not like that mature. It's like,
that's a good point.
Really complex, like, intuitive human experience. Mm-hmm. Things that you really only can experience with age as you watch the years just fly by, you know? And so I have not watched One Punch Man, but I understand that they have some jokes and themes that are a little bit for an older audience, question mark. Like the dialogue, I think, is a little bit more like, not raunchy, but like adult jokes and stuff. I don't know what is making me think that. Again, I haven't watched. I have no idea. I have no idea. But even Bleach, like Bleach, there's something about Bleach where even though, yeah, they're in high school, they really feel like adults somehow. Yeah, like, I don't know what it is. All the kids really feel like they're adults. And the themes in Bleach feel really complex and like not just, I'm not strong enough, which is a so totally valid and fun theme to play with. Obviously, we like Shonen. But yeah, I can totally see that parallel. Long story made even longer. I hear what you're saying, and I would concur with the statement you've made today here on the podcast.
Well, why don't we both watch the first episode? I think we both are in agreement that we really liked the first episode, right? Mm-hmm. Why don't we talk about some of the elements that made this episode? Kind of stand out. Why don't we start with the character design? What did you think of the character design so far?
Yeah, I think the character design, I mean, I have also read into this. I don't think I, given the pacing, I don't think I've read outside of season one. I probably read right up to the end of season one, or what we'll get through in the first core. But I think the character design is cool. Like, I really appreciate that this character's old. So, like, he's got some scruff and, like, he gets tired and, you know, he's like a little bit bigger, but he's just, like, such an average guy. He's such an average looking man who's just going to work and cleaning up. Like, there is nothing special about him.
Yeah.
And he, like, feels it and knows it. And it, that is, comes through for me in the character design. I of course think, you know, Mina, our character who clearly is excelling, she's super cool, super, you know, focused, driven, very, very like leader of the military pack, if you will. And that's just the vibe of her character design. I think that's great. The long black hair always screams like you're a skilled assassin if you're a lady to me. it totally does. It just screams that to me. I'm like, look at your, okay, please, Spy Family. And Ichikawa is like, yeah, like he's our rookie. I think it's great. I think it makes sense. You know, even, I think his hair is a little like, damn, like they could have made him any inch cooler. Like that hair looks kind of like you put a hat on and you took the hat, like a skull hat, like, you know, like the, like, it looks like he put it on and then the hair solidified and then he took it off and the hair didn't move.
I did not think hat hair, but now that you say it, I'm like, okay, everybody else does feel like they have a pretty intentional hair design, with the exception of Hibino, like the main character, like to your point, it just looks very average, which is solid. Yeah. I love the detail that has gone into the kaiju that we've seen so far, though. Right. Yes. And like, I know they're not characters, but I just will speak to that. Right. Because they've done a really great job of like creating these creatures to scale and also just like make them scary, feel legitimately like a threat. And yeah, I think they kind of nail that. The other thing that I really like about the Defense Force costumes, the ones that you see in the pilot, is they don't seem like sci-fi futuristic. They feel like grounded Defense Force military gear. Like they I don't know, like sometimes you see shows and they look like I don't even know what I'm trying to say. They have lights in them. Yeah, lights in them, or they look like magic, like mage military uniforms. I don't know. They're very European centric. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just feel like these outfits that people wear, like the ones that the cleaning corporation wears, that those just look like a sanitation team.
They make sense. Yeah. Yeah,
everything kind of just makes sense. So I really like that. I guess by extension to the character designs, as we're talking even about the kaiju and the detailing and so forth, what did you think about the animation as a whole?
pardon me. I thought the animation was really cool. I mean, even speaking to the kaiju, something that really got me was like, you know, it's not just like, in the first episode, we go from like a normal day to a kaiju has just appeared. And there's a scene, there's a shot where like there's some people walking like on a, I don't know, there's some sort of underpass and people are walking in a path under the highway or whatever, but there's a river. So there's like a little bridge and the kaiju just comes in from the river and just comes into the camera, destroys the sidewalk. The people go who knows where, but I'm like, they're probably gone. And that sort of like that moment really did get me of like, oh, I'm like dropped in. I'm locked in. This is not just, oh, la, 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 kaiju, heroes come, blah, blah. They're like, no, this is for real. This is very serious. And to your point earlier that I had that same effect, but that scene in particular got it for me. I like the animation. The glass, bro. The glass. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's little details in the animation that really kind of make it like, ooh, like you didn't need to, but like I'm really happy you did, and it makes it like special. There's a lot of care put into this so far for me in the pilot. What do you think about the animation?
I think the animation and again the scale of the monsters and the devastation and the way that they show that destruction and the fluidity of the movement, especially when things are moving really, really quickly, and the action that we saw from the Defense Force that was, you know, taking them out, that for me is what really made this kind of parallel to One Punch Man, like very crisp to me, because you see that a lot in One Punch Man. But the difference being that, I don't know, that this is a little bit less... I'm trying to find the right word for it, because in One Punch Man, as the name suggests, it's over in one punch. And so it's it kind of deflates the tension because you just know that it's going to be over very quickly with the one punch. And that's a part of the gag to that show that makes it so, so cool. So this is like this buildup for the villain and then it's just over. Whereas here it feels more grounded. The stakes feel higher, the difference in skill. I don't know. Like it still hasn't been established, you know, how dangerous fighting them is, particularly for this particular, the Defense Force that we've seen. So the stakes are really high. I don't know. It feels more grounded overall. So that's something that I really like about it. Yeah.
Well, I feel like this kind of feeds right into another topic of ours, but like we always love talking about the action. So like, how do you, did anything else stand out to you as far as the action or the fights or anything like that?
You know, there's a moment when he's on the ground injured, and I'm going to try to keep this as spoiler free as possible. And there's a threat imminently facing him. And one of the new employee, I'm forgetting his name, Ichikawa. Yeah. Ichikawa comes and helps him out. I'll just say that. But
yeah.
The way that was done at the last second was masterful. You know, you'll often see like time slowing down, and then like, I don't know, like there are action tropes that you might expect. And I think they do a really good job of keeping some of these action moments fresh and new and interesting and exciting. It still hasn't exactly been explained kind of like the mechanics of how the fighting takes place. So now it's still just really interesting to watch, like as they're taking these creatures on, particularly the Defense Force. It's cool and it's interesting, and it is a little, I was going to say gory, but I don't know if that's the right word. It's not like Chainsaw Man gory. It's really interesting. I think it's really fluid. I'm excited to see more of it. I have a lot of faith in the studio that's behind this, because they've done a lot of really great work. We were talking about it before the podcast. They've produced like Attack on Titan, and they've done a number of other shows too. So I believe that we're going to see some really crisp, fluid, fresh action scenes. At least that's what I think we have in store for the rest of season one. But what about you? What was your take on the action so far?
Yeah, I think to your point, how I'm feeling generally speaking is like, I liked what I saw so far, and I know that it was like baby in comparison to like kind of some of the things that I could only imagine we're going to see. And I, to your, pardon me. And I also am looking forward to more of like seeing the Defense Force, and because to what you said earlier, again, like they do feel like they're a little bit more specific in like the character that they are, the style that they are, like even though they're in this tactical gear, it does kind of feel like each of them have like a power is the wrong word, but like a thing. And I'm excited to see kind of like what are like the best of the best are up to with this. I think I'm really actually excited to see that and how they work together, and those fight scenes I think are going to be really, really engaging. So how did this pilot compare to other big anime pilots? How did this compare for you?
I don't know if this is controversial. And I'll admit that I have a little bit of a bias, because I did not finish the season like I said I would, and I will, but I didn't. But I think this has a better first episode than like Chainsaw Man, personally. The Chainsaw Man first episode,
I'm trying to remember,
was heartwarming, and it was a good first episode. It really was a good pilot, but I feel like this episode has accomplished more in 20 odd minutes in establishing the world, a couple of the key characters, setting the tone for the scale of, you know, the conflict and the fighting, and, you know, really creating a pretty big world and tools that they can play with as the season goes on. Whereas in some of like Chainsaw Man, for example, it still like gives you a little bit of a peek, but it you still have no idea how big the world is. And I'll extend that to JJK too. Like, I think JJK had a great first season, don't get me wrong. But like, even in the first episode, you don't really know how big it could go. And I think they established a lot of really great character development and gave a clue about what could come into the future. So I think as far as pilots are concerned, I think it was phenomenal. That's my take though. What about you?
I liked the pilot. I liked the pilot. And I don't think that this pilot did something that I think other big pilots have done, where I'm like hungry for episode two. I'm like, I can't wait to see episode two, but I'm not like, oh my God, what is going to freaking happen. I need it now. I'm so invested. You know what I mean? Even though I like this story, but I think, you know, and that experience might be to that again. Like, I really genuinely think that this is, even though it's a shonen, I hear you, it's a shonen, but it just feels like this story, because it's kind of surrounded by an adult and a little bit more like,
oh, it's more
higher level themes. Yeah. Like it feels like it didn't need to punch us in the beginning, because maybe this is going to be somehow, you know, I don't know. I think it's going to be action filled, but I really feel like the beautiful thing about kaiju is like, it's really character driven.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it will turn out not to be. Maybe I'll eat my words, but like that's it. And because I've read it, but that's my feeling, at least from the pilot. I'm like, you know what? Maybe this is going to be a little bit more character driven, even though I know the story and I know there's going to be a lot of action because it's a shonen. But with that being said, if we're just talking about the isolated pilot, yeah, like I think Chainsaw Man had a really gut-wrenching pilot, to your point. I can't even remember JJK's pilot, but I'm thinking about like Attack on Titan's pilot. That one made me like, I have to watch the entire first season now. And I basically did.
Yes, you did. You know?
I did. I went and I think I watched like at least 2 hours of Attack on Titan before I was like, okay, it's when I am gonna have to
sleep. I think you watched 3 hours of Attack on Titan. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty confident about this, by the way.
Because I'm also an early riser, so I got up, made my coffee, and was like, well, it's COVID, so what am I going to do? I'm just going to sit and watch Attack on Titan all day, I guess.
Did you watch the pilot for Attack on Titan after you recovered from watching Your Name? Was it Your Name?
It was not Your Name.
Was it Silent Name? Voice? Gosh, I don't remember. Because we had finished something, and then we watched that.
I wish I knew, because it could have, it definitely wasn't Your Name. I didn't do anything after Your Name. And I couldn't.
Yeah.
But maybe it was a Silent Voice. Maybe it was also the first My Hero movie. I really liked the first My Hero movie, and I was emotional during that.
It could have been either that, of those. Honestly, that sounds right. I do remember, though, distinctly feeling like I've never been so proud to see mascara absolutely ruined, because it was all over your face. I felt pretty proud there.
I know. Is it embarrassing to say I cried during the first My Hero movie? Like, am I gonna get canceled? Like, I think the internet would come for me and be like, so much a little baby! My Hero movie? Did you know the fandom stinks?
Like, on a slightly, and on a related note to that, though, but slightly to the left, Rion, who had been on our podcast a couple of times, sent me an article, I think last weekend, that there was a tournament held, and I don't know if it was in Japan or if it was here in the United States, but that, like, had to disperse the whole room that the tournament was taking place in because of a foul smell that was present, and then they made an official notice that was like, we will have to turn you away if you don't bathe, like, we can't let you stay in the space. So
smell,
like, apparently that is a well discussed issue at Yu-Gi-Oh! TCG tournaments, the trading card game tournaments, that, like, this is a problem. Hygiene tends to be a problem with the people that attend that. And I saw that article and I was like, of course, like, that's pretty embarrassing, but.
Okay, so you heard it here, folks. The actual most smelliest fandom is Yu-Gi-Oh! Binge Monster said it, so cancel Yu-Gi-Oh! Fans. I'm just kidding. Because, you know what? Okay, so, wow. A quick little tangent for me after your quick little tangent, and then we'll get back to Kaiju number, I promise. Cheeks. This week was like, hey, my friend just told me there was a season 4 and 5 of Yu-Gi-Oh! And I never watched it.
Oh, no. He didn't?
The last 2 seasons of the original Yu-Gi-Oh!
Oh, I have to call him when we're done recording this.
We have been watching it all week.
Duel! Oh, I have to
Yu-Gi-Oh!
I have to call him. I have to call him. This is because I've also been watching Yu-Gi-Oh! Sporadically. Interesting. I'm so glad you said this.
So I've watched now, I feel like, I haven't watched it in its full, but I've now watched almost the last two seasons of Yu-Gi-Oh! And basically nothing else.
That's hysterical. Well, speaking of things not known, undiscovered, to round it out, we were both listening to the end, the ending song for Kaiju number 8, bringing it right on back. And I was listening to the song, and I'm like, wow, this is pretty good. And I was like, this voice, I know it. And lo and behold, it was OneRepublic. I was genuinely shocked.
This is OneRepublic?
Well, because my first reaction was, they don't sound Japanese.
Well, it was all in English.
Yeah, but like, there are lots of ending songs that are in English, but you hear the accent underlay, right? Like, you can...
Okay, fair, yeah, okay.
At least, I don't know, maybe, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I can usually hear, I'm like, oh, that is a non-native English-speaking person singing in English, and, you know. But this, I was like, this is a little too good to not be a native English speaker. So I'm like, okay, that's an American band. Listening to it, I'm like, damn, this is really, is that Ryan Tedder? Like, who is this? And I look it up, I'm like, it's OneRepublic. I do not know, and I'm really sitting here thinking, I cannot think of another, I don't know if OneRepublic's considered an A-list band, but as far as I'm concerned, they're like a huge, they're of the larger, well-known American bands. I can't think of another show that has ever had an ending song or an opening song by like a wildly popular band like this. I just can't think of one.
Especially like an American band.
Yes, specifically an American band.
Because we will put some respect on TXT and Stray Kids and ENHYPEN, who have all done anime openings. Thank you very much.
Yes, that's true. That's true. TXT
globally successful bands.
Yes, they make some great songs. But yeah, I can't think of a single American band or American artist. I mean, if our listeners can think of one, let me know. I would love to be humbled. But this is cool. Like, I mean, and it's also a great song.
It's great. I mean, even I think the opening is pretty good too. I don't know. I think the opening is in Japanese. I don't even remember now. But I remember being like, oh yeah, this is good. But the closing kind of really took me because I was like, this thing's all in English. That's okay. Like, yeah. And you have to listen to it because I mean, in the first episode, hopefully if you haven't watched it yet, definitely do. But so you have to stay through the closing because there's like actually something after.
Yes.
You have to stay through the closing song or just skip it, but be strategic about it. And it's not a chibi thing, okay? It's not chibi. It's like, you should, and it's not a look at the next episode, even though those are really cool and you should do that. It's like actually something that is like part of it. So definitely stay till the very end.
That is a good point.
And listen to the entirety of the OneRepublic closing song of Kaiju number 8. I just want to know, like, how this happened.
I don't know.
I'm not even mad about it. Obviously, I'm not mad about it. It's good. But I'm like, how did this, like, who in what rooms did a connecting talky-talk and then a boop-a-dee-boop-boop-boop-boop, cash the check, make the tunes, lyrics, like, how did that happen? You know, that's what I really want to know, and I never will. But hopefully this opens the door, and like, I mean, I don't know. Actually, I contradict what I say because I think there are so many Japanese artists who I'm sure are phenomenal, and two, would really like love the opportunity to make a closing or an opening for a major anime coming out each season. But as like an American, I was really excited. So I don't know. I like hope, but I also don't hope because obviously the music that comes out of Japan is phenomenal.
And that could also be one way where like Crunchyroll could do that pretty interestingly of like enabling you to listen to an ending song, let's say, that is produced by a band or musicians in your home country or in your home in your native language. That'd be one really cool way. And then that way you could switch like which one you want to listen to. And that, you know, that could be one really interesting way to pay artists from around the world and bring all of them into the community.
Yeah. Well, Crunchyroll already does like the music thing where you can like scroll all the way to the bottom of the app or the screen and you can like watch the music video or you can like know about the artist. Like they're already trying to like integrate the music a little bit more into the whole experience, which I think is pretty cool.
Well, the song is called Nobody by One Republic, and as of the moment we're recording this episode on Sunday, it has 276,000 views, and it came out 2 days ago. With, like, no marketing behind it, I feel like I haven't heard about this at all. So be curious to see what it looks like a week from now and see if it's gone up or skyrocketed.
I'm really excited to see what comes out of Kaiju number 8. You know, having read some of it, I know that we're in for a really big treat. So, with that, this has been our anime show, and I hope you go ahead and follow us on all socials. And if you have thoughts about this episode, please do leave a comment or talk to us and subscribe. And I've been a Green Queen.
And I'm Binge Monster.